Welcome to Going Mental. This is your host, Eileen Kelly. I'm interested in the things many of us face but don't always talk about. After spending 5 months at McLean Hospital working on my mental health, I'm back. A little more insightful and with plenty of stories to share. Expanding on my usual topics of sexuality and intimacy, this season takes into account everything I learned during my stay. I'll be bringing together a wide range of guests, some beloved, some contentious, to discuss work, love, and the bizarre phenomenon that is modern life. Join me as we try to make sense of it all. On today's episode, I sit down with Erica Lust. She is an award-winning adult cinema director and producer who creates sex-positive indie porn. In an industry that often fails to show a true representation of sex, Erica's focus on female pleasure, cinematic values, diversity, and an ethical production process have helped change how pornography is consumed. Could you introduce yourself to our listeners who aren't familiar with your story?
Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Well, so my name is Erica. Erica Lust. I am a filmmaker and I make erotic films, films where people are having real sex. Some would call them pornography, obviously, but it's a kind of indie adult cinema. It's a term that I love when I'm talking about my films. And I'm Swedish. I was born in Stockholm and I work and live in Barcelona in Spain. I moved here it's even more than 20 years ago.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. So what was your upbringing like? You were born in Stockholm or grew up in Stockholm. Were your parents very open about sex?
Well, you know, I am Swedish, so I guess that when I compare with American friends, for example, yes, they were probably quite open about it. But when I compare with other Swedish friends, sometimes I feel that they were maybe not that open about it. So it's all kind of relative.
Yeah.
But what I can tell you is that the sex education that I received as a young person in Sweden was great. I had the opportunity to have sexologists coming into my school, talking to us. And it wasn't just, you know, the typical kind of female sexologist. There were men and women, and they were, you know, getting us into smaller groups so we could actually talk to each other and not only talk about, you know, the educational aspect of sex, but also talk about emotions and feelings and our passions and what it felt like, you know, when you're looking at someone that you feel attracted to, those butterflies in your stomach. And I had a very, I think, very organic sex education. It wasn't, you know, just kind of at one point in school, because that's what I feel that many of my friends had. You know, they talked maybe about sex once when they were around 12 and then when they were 16. But in my school, we had sex education every year. It was part of the upbringing, you know, so they kind of followed us through and helped us really evolve as human beings and as sexual human beings, as we all are. Because in the end, you know, I sometimes say to people, you know, we exist because of sex. We are here because people had sex. Of course, some people were born in a laboratory or were made, made in a laboratory. But most of us, we were made by people having pleasure, having sex.
Yeah. When were you kind of first introduced to, you know, other cultures maybe not being as open as they were in Sweden or kind of having this really inclusive sex education?
Well, it's a good question. And I guess the first time I kind of realized that in other countries, they didn't have access to the same kind of sex education was a year when I went to France. I was 16. I got a scholarship and I ended up at a boarding school in France. And it was kind of hard for me realizing that people around me were not, it's not even that they didn't have that kind of sex education, but they were not open about sex. Because for me, it was something that I used to talk about with my friends. We were talking about sex. It was very kind of natural to us. And there in France, it felt like they were not at all on that kind of open, talkative, level with sex.
Yeah, it was much more hush-hush. And I feel like they're even more open than America when it comes to sex.
Probably. But I still felt a huge difference. And then when we talk about French culture, people used to say that France is a very open country where sex is quite natural, etc. But I felt that when I compared it to Sweden, it was more of a classical kind of structure. And especially amongst kind of my female friends, it felt like they were maybe not at the same awareness of feminism as we were in Sweden.
Yeah. So I guess when did you even kind of get involved with the sex industry, with adult cinematography? and could you talk a little bit about The Good Girl, because that was your first adult film, correct?
Uh-huh. But actually, for me, it all started on as a consumer, as anyone, just kind of wanting to check out porn, as a young adult, wanting to understand who you are and what other people are doing and how what sex could look like, and feeling inspiration and getting inspiration from erotic images. And that's kind of how I, stumbled upon porn, started to look at it. I guess my first experience with porn was when I was even younger. I was 12 or 13, and a friend of mine had a pajama party, and she had found this video cassette that her father had taped, and she showed it to the whole group, and we were kind of looking with big eyes. But maybe not that excited, more kind of horrified, curious, kind of what's happening here? This looks ridiculous, because that was at a time where the porn was more kind of was very stereotypical, at least what we were looking at, then I didn't really think about it for years. It was not really something that I was that interested in. But later on, when I had started university and, I had a boyfriend who kind of suggested, let's, watch porn together. And we did. And I think that at that moment, I had a strange feeling with porn. Somehow my body enjoyed it. My body liked the images that I was looking at. I felt, I felt excited. I felt horny by these images. But at the same time, I had a feeling that I didn't really like it. It was not kind of exciting for my mind or for my eyes, it was kind of just the body who liked it. So I had this huge discrepancy between, my body reaction and my brain going like, what is this? What is wrong with this? At that time in life, I had, I was studying political science, and I was all about trying to analyze, understanding, deconstructing, every kind of power balance that was, in society. And I had studied gender studies, and it seemed to me that porn was so much about male pleasure, that it was everything had to do kind of with the men and with their ejaculations, and the women were used as this beautiful objects or as this provocative kind of people who were there to give the pleasure to the men, but it wasn't really their stories who were being told. And I think that I kind of reacted to that, and that didn't feel great to me. And then I started to have lots and lots of conversations with people around me. and realized quite quickly that most of my male friends, that they liked porn, that porn was part of their life in a quite normal, organic way. But most of my female friends, they had very similar feelings to mine, that something didn't work for them when they were watching porn. And I guess that those kind of thoughts brought me to think more and more and more about it. And I started kind of to Google to see what other people were thinking about pornography. And then I found this wonderful book by a film professor from Berkeley University, Linda Williams. And the book was called Hardcore, The Frenzy of the Visible. And she kind of explained the genre of pornography. She did explain to me in this book that porn was not only porn, that it was actually this whole kind of discourse about, you know, femininity and masculinity and the roles we play through sex. And that kind of, whoa, you know, it spinned my mind. And suddenly I started to think, and I was like, but that means that obviously then you could do it differently. Because in the end, I mean, porn is just watching people having explicit sex. That's what it is. It's not all of these other values that we kind of have put into porn as a society. You know, if you ask anyone out on the street, what is porn? Most people, they think about, you know, nowadays they think about the tube sites, the free porn tube sites online. And they think that porn has all these kind of misogynistic, many times violent values in itself, in this genre. But that's not true at all. Porn is just explicit sex. And then you can make it with whatever values you have as a creator. So yeah, porn can, of course, be misogynistic, as much of it is, or racist or homophobic or whatever. But porn can also be, you know, beautifully crafted. Porn can be, you know, full with a vision of female gaze. It can be, you know, from a whole different perspective. It all depends on who you are as a creator and what do you want to do. So that kind of idea was what got me into somehow deciding to explore with this genre. But then when you tell a story, you know, it seems like one day I read a book and the other day I was making a film. And that's not really the truth, because years were passing by, you know, in between. And I got another scholarship. I went down to Madrid to do a part of my master in political science. And then I decided to move to Barcelona. And that decision kind of forced me to start looking for a job, because I needed to earn money. And it was very hard to find a job with anything, you know, because I wanted to work with or international organizations. But, you know, I ended up in Barcelona. It's not like being in New York or being in, you know, Brussels or Geneva or one of those kind of big international organization cities. So I needed to earn my money. I had friends who were working in the audiovisual sector, nothing that really had to do with porn. You know, they were doing television, advertisements, films, etc. And I started out as a driver. I started out as a runner, you know. I was picking up actors at the airport, driving them to their hotels, back to the sets. And I was making, you know, catering. I was doing everything that you could do, like the basic jobs in film production. And doing that, I realized that I really liked it, that it was, you know, it was an interesting ambient to work in. And I had always, you know, had a huge passion for film. I had loved the film since I was a small, you know, child. Theater and film and ballet and opera and all of it. It was for me, you know, like everything I adored. But I had never, ever felt that it was something that I was going to be able to work with. And then suddenly I ended up working on the production side. And working on the production side, I started to advance little by little, you know, became from being a runner, I became a production assistant, a production manager, location manager.
Climbing the ladder.
climbing little by little the ladder, exactly. And I had this kind of this dream of checking out the creative side of film production. So I signed myself up to a few courses in film directing, and that's kind of how it started. You asked, you know, a while ago about my first short film, and I told you the whole story. But that's kind of how it started. I had this opportunity in film school to make a short film, and when I sat down and tried to kind of think, what kind of film do I want to do? I realized that I really wanted to do a film about female sexuality. That felt to me as such an important subject. And I wanted to see if I could make a film that actually showed sex, that showed explicit sex, but without kind of objectifying the women, without, you know, all these kind of nasty values that I had seen a lot of in kind of traditional mainstream pornography. I wanted to do something kind of, you know, with my values. And I wrote this script that I called The Good Girl, and it was actually based on a very classic porn story, because I just took the pizza guy story and I said to myself, there must be a way of doing this story completely differently, you know, because, you know, in porn, it's always, you know, and she calls for a pizza and then this guy turns up and she doesn't have money and then she offers herself instead of, you know, what the hell the pizza costs, you know, it's not that, that cheap. Totally. So I felt, how can I do this differently? And then I wrote this script where the story was told from her perspective. It was, you know, her fantasy, what she wanted to live and feel and see and experience. And still today, when I look at this film, this was back in 2004. So it's quite a while ago. And still today, when I look at that film, I can tell you that I really see the passion there. I see the spirit. I see, you know, I see what I wanted to do, even if technically it's not the best film ever. You know?
It was your first one, though.
It was my first one. Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about kind of how you run your business? You know, you've really walked us through how you got started, but I know having a lot of women and diversity in your productions is really important to you, but kind of you mentioned values in porn. So what are your values and how do you, you know, introduce those to your company?
Well, I think that if we are not happy with the porn that's out there and we want to change it, then we need to figure out kind of what is it that we want to change? What do we want to do differently, right? And for me, some of those things that I really want to do differently, it has to do with representation of women on screen, not only of women, of men also, of gender roles in general, and how we are, you know, seeing people and their personalities and the power balance between different genders, etc. So one thing is how we are representing them on screen. The other part is about participation. Who is doing these films? From what point of view? From what gaze, kind of? And that's where, you know, the women came into kind of my vision of what I wanted to change, because I realized that most of the people who were working in the porn industry were men, especially in roles of kind of decision-making roles, you know, as producers, directors, distributors, website owners. And from the beginning, I've been working really, really hard to kind of gather, not only for the people working in my company, but also for my crews, you know, the people who are working on my sets, to find people who are normally not represented. I would say that today we are about maybe 90% women on my sets.
That's amazing.
Which is It's quite amazing, and it creates really a wonderful atmosphere and a feeling of sisterhood and a feeling of daring to speak up, because that is one of the problems I hear women talking about all the time, and especially, you know, my friends who work in the film industry, that the film industry in general, now I'm not even talking about porn, you know, it's still so male dominated.
I'm so sorry. One second. Sorry about that. It's the mailman.
The mailman. There we have a story. What does he want? So I've been pushing a lot for having more and more women coming in, you know, and what I still see today is that, because now we filled up, most of the people on our sets are women, and in my company also, but still what I'm struggling a lot with is, for example, the internet department, you know, because it is still today very hard to find female programmers out there. So that is something that if you are a young person out there and you're thinking, what should I study? Get into programmation. Become a programmer and change the world, you know, because we need you. But I was talking a little about the ambience, saying that many of my friends working in the film industry, they tell me stories, you know, about especially a director of photography that I've been working with now for quite many years. Most film sets where she's going, she's working with men, you know, directors are men, producers are men, art directors are men, etc. And she's always telling me that she has a really hard time to find that, you know, space to be able to speak up and say, hey, this is my opinion. This is what I think that we should do. And what I see on my film sets is that the ambient that we have kind of created makes it so much easier for women to dare to speak up. Maybe it is more a more kind of female way of talking. Maybe we are a little less bossy in the sense of, you know, saying, hey, this is the way I want it. But what I see is that many women are kind of proposing ideas, even if they really think that this is the idea that they would like to go ahead with, you know. What do you think about if we would, you know, put the light in that corner instead of that corner?
Well, it sounds very collaborative.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely. No, and then when you're talking more about values, what values are we looking for here? We're looking for values of diversity, which I think is very important. We need to, you know, have more people representing from all different sides of society, people from different ethnicities, different races, different backgrounds, different age groups, and on screen, on screen and behind screen, you know, both. And it's something that sometimes I think about, you know, porn in general and the mainstream porn that's out there. And some people say it's just kind of the Barbie dolls and the muscular guys that's represented in porn. But actually, that's not really the truth, because in porn, many, many different people are represented. The problem with most mainstream porn is how are they being represented? Because most of them are being fetishized, tokenized, objectified, and, you know, really kind of put out there to be classified somehow. You know, when you go on this tube sites online, you see all these groups like Asians, Latinas, Ebonies. You see groups like interracial. You see, you know, the teenagers and the MILFs, and now even the DILFs lately, you know. But it's so much about this kind of tokenizing way of telling stories, when I think that what we need to do in porn is humanizing. We need to tell stories from people's point of view, and they need to be involved in that process. So that's kind of another one of the values. It's how you produce these films. You know, you think about the idea already when it's only an idea. You think about, how am I representing people? What am I showing in these films? What would happen if I would change gender roles, for example? Would that collective that I am representing be happy with this kind of representation? I think that all of those ideas are very, very important. But then it's obviously a lot about talking to your performers when you are in the casting process, if you know what you are looking for, trying to find the right people, getting to know them. Who are they? What do they like? Who would they like to work with? What kind of natural kind of sexuality do they have? And do they have any boundaries? Do they have any no-goes? Are there people they definitely don't want to work with? You know, having a very open conversation and making sure that they are being, you know, cared for, that there is someone at our set, not only me as a director, because the day that I am shooting, I'm into 100 of different details and talking to different departments and, you know, seeing what is happening. So I normally have a talent manager on set, so the performers know that they can always reach out to that person and talk to that person if something would not go right, if there's something they are not happy about. And make sure that if we are talking, because most of the people I'm working with are already performers in the adult industry, even if they are working more in the indie sector or more in the mainstream sector, but they are already kind of involved in this business. But if I'm talking to newcomers, that I am sometimes, because I receive, you know, many, many emails every day, I would say, you know, some dick pics, of course, but some serious emails. Yes, you know, that's, you don't want to see my inbox. But the dick pics don't get answers. But if there's a nice text and there's, you know, a presentable picture of someone, then of course they get an answer. And this is an industry, I would tell you, that really needs, it needs great performers. It needs people who, you know, who are ambitious and who are into acting and who love sex and who want to do this kind of work. But at the same time, if you are deciding to do this kind of work, you need to be very cautious. You need to be very sure about what you are doing, because it is going to change your life. Whether you know want it or not, that's going to be a result of it. It will always change your life if you decide to get naked and put your images on the internet. People around you will always find out. So these are also conversations that I have with performers before, making sure that they are prepared to get into this industry if that's what they really want to do.
Yeah, it sounds like you have really open dialogue about kind of, once you enter the industry, you've entered it. And I think that is something to explore, that, you know, once you have naked photos online, naked videos online, even if in your community and the adult industry, you know, it's very accepted, and the greater kind of scale, it is still very shaming, especially here in America.
The stigma is huge. That's how it is. And hopefully we are little by little changing this. I also really hope that my work and the films that we are doing is changing this. But it's still the reality we live in. But this is even a stigma that we see on social media. We see it, you know, and especially with women, because look at all the fitness accounts that's out there, for example, that are also people showing quite a lot of skin, even if they're not showing all of it, you know. But still, the men who are doing it, most of them get very positive comments like, wow, how great you worked your body, you know, you look really nice, man, etc. But women get shamed all the time. It's how it is. And this is something that we all need to think about, and we all need to try to work actively to change if we want a different world.
Yeah, and that's what I love so much about the work you're doing, is because it's really from the ground up. You know, even when you talk about kind of how you run your set and your company, it's not just once you arrive to the set date, you're like, oh, now let's have the conversation. It's really from the beginning. So I really appreciate that. How do you think, or what are the major differences of, you know, a woman made film, like the end product versus, you know, more of the male gaze, this male led pornography?
Well, I think that if you kind of look at the adult industry at this moment, what we see a lot of is that many of the men who are involved are very much into fetishizing women somehow, you know, objectifying women. It's all about their boobs and their asses and, you know, it's, you know, the guys who like the cars and the cigars and kind of that kind of style. I think that many women who lately have gotten involved in this industry as creators are here for more of a kind of profound reason. You know, they want to communicate their sexuality. They want to show the world what it's like being a woman and what it's like desiring as a woman and what it's like having pleasure as a woman. And many of them are here because they are kind of, tired of the stereotyped vision of women. They are tired of the 4 minutes of really hard penetration and then all the fake kind of orgasms that you know, you look at these women and you go like, she didn't even touch herself, you know? Where's her fingers? You know, where's her clit? Come on.
The clit isn't even in the shot. Like, yeah.
Exactly. It's like, you know, it's not real. But this is not, I mean, my focus is obviously a lot on women, but it's also for men. You know, men need other visions of sex also. They are, I talk to young guys a lot and they are tired of being, you know, being seen all the time as this kind of penetrative sex machine going in kind of, and then... Because it's not even real. I mean, sex, it takes time. It takes time to get to know yourself, to get to know another person, and to find out what turns you on. And then it's not even if you find out what turns you on at one point in life, it might be another thing at another point in your life, because in the end, sex is very fluid. So I think that we all kind of really need to realize that porn is fiction. It's very exaggerated fiction of sex. And it would be nice with more realistic visions.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to note, and I know you talk about this, I've come and watched you speak, that porn does exist as a lot of people's sex education.
It's what it has become. And this and it's kind of sad, you know, because it was never meant to be that way. The porn producers were never like, you know, saying, hey, I'm going to do sex education. This is going to be for the... It was meant to be entertainment, you know, and entertainment for adults, for people who have sex and who knows what it's about and who knows that it's exaggerated, but still the images kind of turns them on and they are, you know, okay with that. But then the internet has changed so much in the last 15 years, and now all these free tube sites online stealing all these videos from creators, putting them out there for everyone to access without, you know, a payment barrier. That is the reason why porn has become sex education, together with the fact that the schools are failing on the young people. The schools are not giving them the sex education so they can actually, you know, criticize for themselves the images that they are seeing, because if they would be more porn, you know, literate, if they would have an idea, they could criticize it for themselves, because young people are not stupid, obviously. they know these things. It's just that adult people are not talking to them about porn. They are pretending like it's not existing. And I think that that's a very wrong strategy. I don't believe in censorship. I don't believe in hiding. I believe in open conversations. I think that what we need to do is, as parents and educators, we need to talk to our, you know, teenagers. We need to talk even to younger, you know, children than teenagers, because today we have given them technology. They all have mobiles. They have iPads. They have computers. They have access to porn in just a click, and nobody is preparing them for it. I as a parent, you know, sometimes I say that I would never let my girls out in the world. You know, I would never let them go to a party or to a bar or to a discotheque without talking to them about alcohol, cigarette, drugs, situations they could get into. Because as a parent, I want to prepare them for the world. And I think the same goes for the internet. You know, as a parent, if you are giving them access to the internet, help them out, you know, talk to them about the internet and what you can find on the internet and how you need kind of to protect yourself, and explain to younger children, explain to them that porn is not meant for them. Porn, the same way as terror movies, horror movies, dramas, are not meant for young children, you know. They will not be able to sleep if they watch it. It's kind of scary in a way, you know. They are not maybe prepared to understand what it is, really. And I think also that porn can be an opportunity in a way for a parent to talk to teenagers about our values. Why don't I agree with many of the values that I see in mainstream porn online? What is it that I don't like about it? That's a great way to, you know, to start explaining gender roles, racism, many, many different situations that are being portrayed in porn.
And your preferences, what turns you on, what doesn't, so that when you begin your own sex life, you kind of have an idea.
Sexual identity, yes. Super important. But this is also something that makes me kind of happy when I see younger generations, because I see them so much more prepared to understand the importance of sexual identity and of love in general. They are so open-minded of opportunities and possibilities, because I'm 44. I was born in 77. And, you know, when I grow up, even if I talk to you about the great sex education in Sweden I had, etc., I can at the same time tell you that I grew up in a very heteronormative society where, you know, not until I kind of became a young adult, I started really to understand different sexual identities and how people identified and their preferences, etc. But today I see, you know, my daughters in a very open world where, you know, they are already communicating to friends, kind of saying, hey, so are you into guys or girls? Or, you know, they're so open-minded when it comes to who you love. And that's just, you know, so wonderful to see.
Yeah, I think you're hitting on so many good points. I read somewhere, I saw the statistic that actually by the age of 9 years old, at least in the United States, that children have been exposed to some form of pornography, which I think is really fascinating, because here we really don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering what you think. Obviously, I want to get into the positives of porn, especially what you're doing, but kind of the negative effects that mainstream porn has had just on society in general, on advertisements in the media, gender roles. Yeah, I want to just pick your brain.
Well, I think that porn is a very, very influential genre. And that's, you know, that's an interesting thought, because so many people think that porn, you know, it's just shit, but it is actually influencing a lot. So I think that if we can do better porn, we can, you know, influence in a better way so many things. But what we see is, it's a lot of these tendencies, especially with young people, that they think that something is wrong with them because they don't work sexually as the porn stars. And then it's so important to remember that the porn stars are professionals here. These are people who, you know, are trained to be gladiators somehow, sex gladiators in this world. You know, they have trained for that. Some are even taking medications to be able to, you know, hold an erection for that long, etc. And then there's a camera filming, and the camera is, you know, faking sometimes things that you think that is happening that are not really happening. And we all know this. If we talk about Superman, we know that there's action movies where, you know, Superman can fly. And we obviously know that no man can fly in this world. And the same goes for porn. So I would like to remind young people that, you know, again, porn is exaggerated fiction done by sex gladiators. You are not going to be able to do exactly the same that they are doing. And for example, young women who are saying, something is wrong with my body, something is wrong with me, I can't have an orgasm. Probably you can't, because you are trying to redo what they were doing in the porno. And that was not real. You know, if you were a woman, 70% of you out there would probably need to use some clitoral stimulation, some hands to come, you know. I have so many, many conversations with young women who are saying, it works with my vibrator, but it doesn't work with my boyfriend. This is one of the reasons why, you know. And young men, many of them are, you know, getting addicted to porn in a kind of sex negative way, in a non-mindful way, you know, where they are masturbating, open up window after window, kind of impact, and then suddenly they go out in real life and they are together with, you know, a real person, and they don't know what to do with that real person because it doesn't, you know, look like in the porno. It's not that impactful suddenly. So I think that that it's important to have these things in mind when we are thinking about porn. Don't compare yourself to porn, you know. Obviously, if you are young and curious, I do understand why you want to watch it. I did the same, you know. I did want to watch it. But try to find some good porn, because there are good porn out there. There are more and more independent porn done by people who actually care about the sex. Because remember that these tube sites that most of you are probably using, remember that that is not an ethical way of consuming porn.
And it's a lot of it is pirated, correct?
Most of it is. And if you don't pay for it, then the people who are making it, they will not profit from what they are doing, and they will not be able to continue doing great porn. So this is about giving it a value and understanding that people who are working in this industry, they are real people and they need to earn their living, and they need to pay their rent, they need to pay their food, they need to pay their schools for their children, etc. So be, you know, be honest and be aware of that, and help the industry to be an ethical, as good industry as possible, instead of helping the pirates destroy the industry.
I have a question about that point, because I agree with you, but at the same time, I do think, you know, living in a country like the United States where there is such income inequality and there are a lot of people who, you know, are struggling to pay their rent, they probably don't watch porn that much. Is there a way to make ethical porn more accessible? You know, is there a way with advertisements like, how can someone who maybe is strapped for money still kind of have this as a value to pay for their porn?
Well, with porn, it's still, you said advertisement, that is still very complicated because, you know, when you work in porn, you are basically not even allowed to do advertisement. You are very, you know, far away from the normal system. What I kind of can recommend is, you know, sign up to a newsletter. There are lots of opportunities, for example, to see free films, to watch promotions, or to get like a very cheap price at some, you know, special promotions, etc. But still, I mean, the idea here is to be able to offer a product that is so good that you feel the same way as, you know, with Netflix or Spotify, or you feel that it's worth to pay those, I don't know, $4 a month to be, you know, a user and to be able to support that platform and the people who are behind it, kind of. And that's also one of the reasons I think it's so important that the adult entertainment industry becomes, you know, more and more transparent, that people stop being so anonymous, that companies stop being so anonymous, you know, that as a consumer, when you are online, when you are surfing for porn, I would recommend you to see if there's an about page. Can you learn something about this company, about this site, about the people who are working? Can you watch a making of from a film or an interview with a performer? So you can have, you know, that information. Who's the owner of the company? Because if you go to these big tube sites, for example, there's no one there. There's an anonymous postbox somewhere in the world, because these people are obviously not proud enough of the work that they are doing. So they are not daring to show their faces and their names. That's smells a little strange to me.
Well, also the fact that so much of it is stolen, pirated, you know, especially from, I think, of adult performers who are use webcams. Like, there's a lot of times where they steal that footage and then put it on the big porn sites.
And they say that users have uploaded it, but we don't know what users actually have uploaded. We don't know if the users are paid by the company. We have no clue how this works. But what we do know is that these companies are profiting from the pirated material, because we know that they are selling to the traffic that is coming online. They are selling advertisement to that traffic. They are selling, you know, grow your dick pills, and they are selling data sex in your neighborhood, and they are, you know, they are selling all this kind of fake stuff to people, and people are actually buying it, even if it, you know, we are laughing and it seems completely ridiculous, but people are buying it, and it's mostly lonely men who are falling for these kind of advertisement traps, thinking that it's gonna work, and when it doesn't work, they don't go to the police because they are so ashamed that they were online looking for porn at the first place. So they don't want to tell anyone what has happened, kind of. And then these big companies are also using the pirated content to sell their own pay sites to people.
Got it.
So it's, you know, it's kind of double ugly what they are doing in the end.
Yeah. Can you talk about, I mean, we talked so much about, you know, how porn is influencing kind of the negative ways it's influencing society and young people and psyches. What about just like the benefits of porn as someone, you know, who works in ethical porn?
Well, I think there's lots of benefits. I think that we have all the right in the world to, you know, look for something that makes us feel excited and that we can, you know, have a great time of self-care to watching. I think that porn can really help us to understand more about ourselves and what drives us and our own sexuality. And it can open up kind of new inspirations and ideas that we maybe didn't even know that we were turned on by and that we liked. And it can definitely help us to to kind of relax the idea that we are strange and we are different and we are kinky and we are dirty and we are bad people. Because when you see other people doing what you were fantasizing about, that helps you to get rid of the stigma that you might have felt. And I think that cinema in general, not just talking about adult, but kind of the concept of cinema, I think it's so amazing how it can help us to understand people and other points of views, how it can help us to empathize with other people. And here, I think it can really help you to kind of step outside your comfort zone somehow and understand people of different sexualities and different sexual identities and kind of not be so scared of others.
So this podcast, the name of it is Going Mental. So not only did I kind of want this season to be about sex, but also, you know, mental health. And I'm wondering, working in an industry like adult entertainment, if you yourself have ever, you know, come up against any naysayers, people who don't support what you do, and how you deal with that.
Yes, I have. Of course I have. And I am every single day hearing opinions from people who are not happy about what I'm doing, not supporting it. I've been called everything from, you know, fake feminist to feminazi, the whole kind of panorama. Yes. But in the end, you have to believe what you are doing. You have to go through with your ideas. When I started out, when I made my first short film, I tried to show it to some people, some important people in the adult industry, to see their opinion and what they felt about this film. And they were telling me right from the beginning, they say, "Hey, Erica, the film is great. It's actually quite interesting. But you know what? There's no market for women. There will never be a market for women. Women, you know, they will never pay for sex. You pay women for sex." That was kind of, you know, the start I had. That was the first kind of men I met in this industry. They were so old, you know, elephants with visions from a whole different, you know, time. And I think that we have shown them since then that there's a lot of space here for people with new visions and with new ideas. And for me, one of the first things that I really wanted to do, but it took quite many years before I could do it, one of the things I'm mostly proud of is how many women I have now working as directors, you know, because the only way that we can actually change all these kind of old ideas that people have is bringing in an army of directors, you know, coming from different backgrounds with lots of different ideas and showing what we want sex to look like. And people will criticize us, not only me, but all of them, you know. And I always, when we have a chat with a new director, I always, the same as I do with performers, I always talk to them about stigma. And I say, hey, this, you know, that even if you are not stepping, you know, in front of the camera being naked yourself, this will have an effect on your life. People will probably not, you know, like it. I still, you know, have my mother is still not very happy with what I'm doing.
Oh, really?
You know, she's very happy with how it all went and the company that I have created and impressed with, you know, the media and the festivals I've been invited to and the universities where I've gone to talk and, you know, all of the kind of everything around it. But she still, you know, when I talk to her in private sometimes, she says like, "Hey, but when are you going to make, you know, another kind of film?" Oh, this has, you know, criticism and stigma will be part of this forever.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you have your passion. I mean, it radiates out of you that this is truly what you love to do.
I have my passion, and I see next generation coming up, and they are not as critical as the other one.
Well, thank you so much for making time for this. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much. It was great talking to you, and I'm so happy to see, you know, young people getting interested in this and, you know, wanting to know more and exploring and learning about sex, because in the end, that's what we need to do.